Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the soon-to-be-rested voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Indeed, that is true.
You are having a sabbatical, kind of. No, not really a sabbatical, that's a bit extreme, but you're going on a bit of a break.
I am. First holiday for quite some time. Of course, now that I'm not a professional footballer, I can take my holidays in months other than June.
Nice. So, anywhere interesting?
America. So, I'll be going to Florida to get a little bit of sun, and hopefully I will come back refreshed and these shows will go on to another level, Matthew.
An even greater level. Who'd have thought it?
There you go.
Okay, so that means that we won't stop doing the podcasts, of course. The Between the Sticks episodes, at least, will be conducted either via Skype or over the phone across the Atlantic.
Indeed. There could be a huge delay. It could be incredibly frustrating for all listeners, but we will carry on.
We are going to power through.
We are indeed.
Okay, good. Make sure you tune into those as and when they come. Right now, we're going to reflect on all the action from the weekend throughout the Premier League and the English Football League. We're also going to be touching on some of those deadline day moves and any other movers and shakers that occurred throughout January that we feel need a mention. But first up, we're going to speak about Kepa, because Kepa was dropped at the weekend against Leicester for Willy Caballero. Big call from Frank Lampard.
Massive. Absolutely massive call. Reason being, of course, the valuation and certainly the amount of money they bought him for, the age that he's at, to then put someone like Willy Caballero in. From a business point of view, now look, how much Chelsea care about this, how much the owners care about this, it's hard to know. And how much they knew about this, it'd be interesting as well. Because essentially, by doing what they've done, it is quite a big sign that he's not necessarily overly happy with Kepa. But also from a valuation standpoint, bearing in mind how much they brought him in for, what does that now do to his value, to his worth? And from a business point of view, I go back to it. And how often do we see this? And I know a lot of goalkeepers, professional goalkeepers, listen to this, will certainly be able to align with this and understand this, where it's not always necessarily the best player that plays. Sometimes it can be the younger player or the player that's got more market value that might be given the nod. So, for instance, if you've got an asset at a club and a club knows it, then they might get the nod over someone who's a little bit more experienced, who might be that little bit better, knowing that they've got an asset that's growing and someone that's worth a lot of money to the club. There have been arguments, you know, when David De Gea has been having a really, really rough time, they've always stuck by him. And they tend to do that, certainly with goalkeepers in particular. So this one did. It absolutely shocked me when I saw that they dropped him. I wondered whether they might, based on the fact that all of a sudden it gained a bit of traction, the stat being that he had like one of the worst records, save percentage-wise, in Europe. So I did wonder whether that might play a little bit of a part. And some of the interviews I've seen Frank Lampard given, reading between the lines, you could tell that he wasn't 100%. That being said, because of how expensive he was, not for one second did I see this happening.
For me, it suggests that Frank Lampard desperately wanted a goalkeeper in the January transfer window. This is the first game after the window closed. Now, we know they had the transfer ban that was lifted. He didn't get anyone over the line. Some people could read into his press conference on the day of deadline day suggesting that he was a bit moody, a bit frank, a bit blunt. But to drop him the day after the deadline day closes suggests that he's not happy with him.
So it will be interesting to see what happens in the summer. And you're right, that's exactly what it suggests. And there was a lot of stories linking Nick Pope, funnily enough, with Chelsea in the transfer window. Of course, Jack Butland's been linked there for many years now, and that hasn't happened. Look, it must be difficult. This goes back to the business point of view as well, though. If you are one of the owners of Chelsea, given that they spent, what, 70-odd million, was it, on Kepa previously?
72, 73.
Now, look, what do you recoup for him now? If they're dropping him and he's not seen as one of the first-team players, look, he's still got a certain value to him, of course. But given that his stats have been as bad as they are, his value at the moment will be nowhere near what it was. So if they're going to do that, that's a huge statement for the club in that they could end up losing a lot of money if they were to move him on in the summer, or if he were to become a number two. Certainly become an incredibly expensive number two if they are going to bring someone else in. So, look, it wouldn't surprise me if we see a change in the summer. I just think, and I go back to the business perspective, and it's one that I'm understanding more and more with some of the workings that I have now in the world of football, that they've got to be very careful, because as rich as Roman Abramovich is, as rich as the club is, they're not going to want to lose £50 million on an asset, which genuinely could be the case if they don't play him now for the rest of the season. They play Willy Caballero, who has very little value based on his age. All of a sudden, you might have a goalkeeper you've brought in for £70 million that you move on for £15-20 million, and having to replace them again, it could be a financial disaster.
Wow, you reckon he'll drop that much in value?
Well, I don't know, because then who takes him? That's the question. Look, based on this season alone, by the way, and I must say that it's not one where he's made catastrophic error after catastrophic error. You know, you could look at a David De Gea and argue, and obviously I'm a big fan of David De Gea, but he's made a lot more errors than Kepa. The point is with Kepa is that there's been a lot of goals that have gone in where you've just looked and thought, maybe. That's all I'd say. You know, there's been a few where I've touched on the arm swing that he does, and a couple where you just think, oh, do you know what? Another goalkeeper might have saved that, a little bit better coordination might have saved it. I also think, though, the stats can be misleading because it's very easy to look at it. And some of the keepers you see down the bottom sometimes you're shocked at because, you know, looking at them with the naked eye, you think they're having a great season, yet they'll be down the bottom. And interestingly, last season, Neil Etheridge got so many plaudits, and I thought he was brilliant last season. He was down the bottom with all the stats. So you've got to be really careful what you read into these stats. I would say that. I do think this is slightly harsh, personally. I think also he's, by doing this, he has made something of a statement. So again, we'll see what the summer brings. It might just be one of them where they take him out of the firing line for two or three games and reintroduce him. That's what I would like to see happen. But again, we'll wait and see.
We will watch this space. We'll at, you mentioned his age there, 38 years and 126 days. Caballero became the oldest player to play in the Premier League so far this season. And you feel like when you come in as a number two, especially in these circumstances, you just want the game to pass by pretty much without incident. Unless you make some spectacular saves, you just want a nice, easy game. The second goal, Ben Chilwell, clipped cross, came over, Caballero went to follow it, then backtracked. The ball comes back in and Chilwell slots home.
It doesn't look great. It's fair to say that he went chasing and ended up having to sprint back to his goal. Now, look, whether he'd have made the save anyway, possibly not. You know, there's a good chance he doesn't make the save anyway. But again, it doesn't look great. And you'd have to question the decision making, whether he obviously thought he could get to the ball. And in the end, he didn't. And scampering back, had he have stayed central, had he have stayed in his goal the whole time, might have had a slightly better position. He probably would have. Would he have made the save? We'll never know. But certainly, it'll be one that I'm sure when he does the analysis this morning, he'll look back and wish that he'd stayed in his goal.
Okay, moving on to a few goalkeepers who seemed to struggle with crosses this weekend. Lucas Fabianski was one, Vicente Guaita of Crystal Palace and Kiko Casilla of Leeds United as well. All quite similar in their own way. We'll start with Lucas Fabianski. This was against Brighton for Brighton's first goal. Now, the cross came in. It seemed like, when I saw it, that Glenn Murray wasn't really impeding him too much. On second glance, it looked like he just had hold of his arm. Nevertheless, I feel like Fabianski could have been stronger. He went with one punch, whacked it onto Ogbonna's head into his own net.
Yeah, he did. Look, for me, it's a foul. And the reason it's a foul is that it's his body position. The fact that Fabianski, you watch how he punches it, it's twisted his body right round, hence why it was such an awkward-looking punch. Again, without the interference of Glenn Murray, I think he gets there with two hands. I think he could potentially even attack it slightly better fashion, maybe even hold it. And I just think the fact that Glenn Murray's there, it's put him off balance. He's twisted. It's almost like a roundhouse from a boxer. It's not a goalkeeping punch that he's ended up doing. And obviously, in the end, it was a dreadful outcome for him. And you mentioned, look, we've seen this a lot lately, and it's something that I think teams are picking up on a little bit more, where we've kind of gone down this route in football where it's purists. Everyone's trying to play through the third, tick-attacker. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing teams that are going a little bit more direct. Liverpool being a great example, you know, going a little bit more direct. I think we've seen the likes of Burnley. How much success have they had from set pieces? I don't care how good you are. You might be Barcelona. Set pieces are still a massive part of football. And if you're able to put teams under pressure, then, of course, you're going to get your rewards. And from a goalkeeping point of view, and I'm sure all goalkeepers listening in, one of the hardest techniques in football is to catch a cross. You think of it logically, a ball being whipped in at 70 miles an hour, to try and judge the flight of it, to plan your path to get to the ball, to try and avoid all the traffic that's there, to then get a good jump away, get your knee up and hold the ball, is an incredibly difficult skill to master. And it has got more difficult. You think of Peter Schmeichel back in the day. Yeah, he came and caught a lot of crosses, but he wasn't facing the delivery that you're facing now. The footballs were very different to what they are now. So I think we're seeing, obviously, keepers choosing to punch a lot more often, keepers choosing not to come a lot more often. How many keepers now just stay on their line, even when the ball's 4 or 5 yards out? And commentators very rarely say anything now. When the ball's whipped 4 yards out and headed in, it's not expected now that the keeper should come. In terms of the other two that you touched on, yeah, Casilla, look, again, he won't be overly happy. He's a goalkeeper that fascinates me, Casilla. I'm a big, big fan of his, and I've seen him, certainly when it comes to his distribution and the style that he plays with, I like, but he is prone to the odd mistake, and I do think he'll be disappointed with this one.
It deflected up, didn't it, off Hernandez's head?
It was an awkward one again, and do you know what? I touched on Fabianski's body shape. I think the difference here is that he didn't necessarily have anyone impeding him. I just don't think he quite got his body shape correct, and in the end, it looked really, really awkward as he's approached it and got very little purchase on the ball when he went to punch it. And the Gaeta one as well, look, do you know, it's another really awkward one. For anyone that's faced that, and I touch on it, it's a really hard skill to perfect. But a ball that's whipped in, it's often a goalkeeper's worst nightmare. You know, you're stood ready for the corner, you're a couple of yards off your line, back half of the goal, and someone whips it in with pace at your near post. So you consider the movement you've got to do, and you've got to try and then calm yourself in order to make the catch on your goal line, knowing that any type of fumble is going to end up in a goal. Now, the argument would be, of course, if you're a Premier League goalkeeper, this should be bread and butter. But look, it happens sometimes. When it's whipped in like that, and you're not quite able to get your body shape correct, you're not able to get your technique quite correct, and a lot of goalkeepers do actually prefer the pat down, I'd call it. Iker Casillas was a classic for it. I don't remember Iker Casillas ever catching a ball cleanly. He just loved to pat the ball down from distance, and that is a technique that a lot adopt. I used to adopt that. Now, the difficulty is, of course, when a ball's whipped in on a cross under the bar, and that's your preferred choice of catching a ball, well, you haven't got the opportunity to do that. And I think with Gaeta, he just didn't quite get his bearings right, never quite got his shape right, ended up a slight mishandle, but of course, you do a slight mishandle on your line, and it ends up in a goal.
I'm not sure I'm having that.
Go on.
I think that is a monumental error. I think that's goalkeeping 101.
Well, do you know what he did? He came in, obviously he came in afterwards, and credit to him in some ways that he came in and held his hands up. He knows it's an error. It's not one where then I'm saying it's not an error. It is an error. 100% it's an error. What I'm saying is, and I'm sure all goalkeepers listening in will agree with this, it is one of the worst things you can face is a corner whipped in with pace at your near post where you've got to move 3 or 4 yards at pace to get there, and then you're expected to hold the ball, which is being whipped in at 70 miles an hour. It's a difficult skill. Now, that's not to say this isn't an error. And in hindsight, could he have parried? Could he have just got there and just tried to get it out of the goal? But then let's say he had done that and someone smashes it in. We're saying, why don't you catch it?
Well, if he punches it, everyone goes, why don't keepers catch those?
So sometimes
now
you can't win. Look, I think what he did was correct. He went to catch the ball, which was the brave decision. But of course, there is a risk attached, as we saw. Is it an error? 100% it is. He even came in, he apologised to his team. Credit to Roy Hodgson, because he came out and made some comments, which I didn't mind.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't mind.
So I was going to read these out. I'm going to quickly just touch on them now, because he came out, didn't he, in the interview, the post-match interview afterwards, and said, I feel very sorry for him. He's apologised to the team. I made it clear you don't apologise to anyone. We are where we are thanks to you, and that's thanks to the work you've done. These things do happen. Of course, it made a major difference to the game. I feel like, in classic Roy Hodgson style, he's kind of come out and said, no, we love Gaeta. But by the way, it did happen and it was his fault.
Yeah, well, which is true. And I don't think Gaeta will have any issue with that, because what he's basically said for me is that don't apologise, which is great, by the way. Like, I agree with that. Like, goalkeepers never go out to make a mistake. And this is advice I'd give to all goalkeepers out there. You don't have to apologise if you make a mistake, because ultimately you don't go out with the intention to ever make a mistake. Mistakes happen. And if anything, your teammates will come. But the fact that he has gone in and apologised, you know, it shows that he takes responsibility, which I don't mind that from Gaeta's point of view. The fact Roy Hodgson's come out and said, look, you do not need to apologise. You've been brilliant this season, which he has, in fairness. He's been a very solid performer all season. So you don't need to apologise. However, yes, it was your error today. You know, let's all be men about it. Let's be honest about it. Let's not beat around the bush. It was your error that cost us. However, don't worry about it. You just move on to the next game and keep doing what you're doing.
Okay, fair enough. I'll accept that one.
Thank you.
1-1. Moving on to the game between Bournemouth and Aston Villa, we'll get on to Aaron Ramsdale. Quickly before that, Pepe Reina, could he have done better with the goal, the Nathan Ake goal?
Again, I think he will be disappointed. It's a tricky one in that, look, the obvious statement is that you parry it wider, because it's a ball that's been fired in down to his left and he's parried straight back out in front of him and it's led to a goal. So the obvious answer is yes, he could have done better. The difficulty is that when it comes into you like that, it's actually hard to manufacture a parry wide, because it's almost slightly too central. And if anything, the correct call is to hold it if you can, because it's right in the slot. Can you then hold it? If you can, that would be the best possible decision. If you can't, can you find a way to then reshape your hands in order to make sure the parry goes out wide? So he will be disappointed. I'm sure, again, they'll be doing their analysis this morning, I'm sure. And I've got no doubt he'll look at it and think, oh, I could have done slightly better. It is either, for me, that's one where you try and get it in the slot, you try and hold it. And if you don't hold it and it's one where it fumbles out, that's a different thing. The fact that he actually consciously chose to parry it straight back out, I'm sure he'd be a bit disappointed.
Aaron Ramsdale made a great save from Jack Grealish on his inside post, kind of hit the inner thigh, the knee, and deflected away. Great save that was. I want to quickly touch on an incident in this game which kind of passed by without any reference, really. It wasn't really picked up on in the punditry afterwards. There was a moment in the box, the ball was in the air, Bjorn Engels, the Aston Villa player, went up for a header. Aaron Ramsdale came through and absolutely clattered him, punched him full on in the face. Now, I know Aaron Ramsdale, lovely bloke, not a dirty player, didn't intentionally go to punch him in the face, but As a result of the punch, Engels got to the ball first. The ball dipped over the bar. He's then spread-eagled on the floor because Ramsdale has pretty much given him a right-hander. Yeah. How is that not a penalty? Yeah.
Do you know what? It's a tricky one, and this is one ordinarily I have quite a firm opinion on everything we talk about. And this part of me wants to say, well, this is just, it's goalkeeping. You're coming out, you're looking to punch the football, you're not meaning to punch the player, therefore it's completely unintentional, therefore it's not a foul. However, if you look at any other, you could say that about every tackle. A player goes in to make a tackle, they're not intending to hurt the player, mm-hmm. but of course if the ball gets away and they make a tackle and take the player out, it's a foul. So I would have to edge on the side of saying, yes, it should have been a foul. And interestingly, the goal itself, slightly similar situation to some extent, which I think Aaron will be a little bit disappointed with. He had another very good game and he's building a fantastic season. No doubt he'll be one of their candidates for player of the season. But again, the decision to come for the goal, in hindsight, he probably should have stayed on his line, given that it was one of those tricky ones. He got tempted in, decided to come out and didn't quite get there first. And you do wonder, similar actually, we haven't touched on this, Matty Ryan, in the game between West Ham and Brighton. Touched on Fabianski, but Matty Ryan, same one again, that it's one of them, if you do decide to come and you're coming 5, 6, 7 yards out and you don't get there, what it means is if someone does, like we saw in the game between Brighton and West Ham, the West Ham player gets there, gets the touch to it, ends up rolling into an empty net. Similarly here, Aaron Ramsdale doesn't quite get there, which means that it ends up rolling into an empty net. It would change things completely if you've got your goalkeeper stood on their line. Now, it may still end up in a goal, but of course, you give yourself a much better chance to make the save. So just a couple of points on decision-making there from Matty Ryan and from Aaron Ramsdale.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
What a keeper caper we have this weekend. Couple of ones to talk about here. First off, we're going to start with David Raya in the game between Hull and Brentford. Great win for the Bees, but not one of the greatest moments of Raya's career.
No, it wasn't. And first and foremost, I feel like I do this with a lot of goalkeepers, but it's certainly true in David's case. Fantastic season. You know, I think the response to this error for me said a lot. The amount of Brentford fans that, and obviously I'm still connected with a lot of Brentford fans on social media, that straight away jumped to his defence, because he has been phenomenal this season. And certainly the way that Brentford play, he's the perfect fit. He is getting a lot of interest from Premier League clubs, and rightly so. However, this wasn't a particularly pleasant moment. The ironic thing is that David Raya is known for being fantastic with his feet. Mm. You know, his distribution. And if anything, my only comment here is I just think it's overconfidence. You know, a ball's fired through from Ryan Tafazoli. And it's interesting. When you see it from behind the goal, looking at the entire pitch, Ryan Tafazoli's hit this ball forward and turned away and disgusted himself, because it was a dreadful ball that he's played through. And David Raya, rather than just deciding to pick it up, like most goalkeepers would, he's obviously very confident with his feet, was going to take a touch to look to play. And I guess he's already thinking about what he's next to do. And it just goes straight through him. Just misses his touch completely, turns around, scampers back, can't get there. It's in the net. You can see how disappointed he was, but straight away all the Brentford players come over to him and make a point of, you know, that don't worry about it, it's one of those things. And as you say, in the end, they end up winning 5-1, so it's not necessarily too much of an issue.
Thomas Frank's face was a picture. Grimacing. What has just happened? What I would say, if I was Ryan Tafazoli, I'd be claiming that goal.
Well, it is. Yeah, I saw it was down as an own goal.
Got given as an own goal.
It's bizarre because it is on target. So
it's on target, and
that.
It's not like it's wildly deflected. It's just gone through his legs. So he's not turned around and whacked it into his own goal.
No, I agree. I think that should be a Ryan Tafazoli goal. It's certainly an error from David Raya, but it should be a Ryan Tafazoli goal.
Okay, in League One, Ipswich, Peterborough. Will Norris was dispossessed by Sammy Smodix. Great loan spell for him, by the way, from Bristol City. But yes, pass back from Cole Skuse. Will Norris tried to take it round Smodix. Didn't work out.
No, he decided to take it round him because of the first touch. Do you know, it's a horrible one. So goalkeepers, you'll all have been here. You come to your near post because your player is out in a fullback position who plays the ball back to you. Now, for a start, he's played it back to him on his left foot. Now, that's the first thing here. And ordinarily, what I'd say, and I'm sure goalkeepers listening in, make a real point to your defenders, play it outside of the post, first and foremost. And if he plays it a little bit gentler, then Will Norris can just fire it downfield first time. However, he's played it slightly inside towards goal. So he's really focused on taking a good first touch. His touch is okay, it's not great. Now all of a sudden you've got this situation where, if you can picture, you've got your back to goal, the ball is directly in front of you, and you've got someone closing you down very quickly from your right-hand side. To be honest, in hindsight, the best thing you probably could have done was just a big toe punt. Just get it away. Just do whatever you need to do. It would have looked ugly as anything, but just a big toe punt up the field. Genuinely, that would have been the best thing. Obviously, what he's decided to do, And I get it. He thought with the player coming in, if he'd been a bit clever, go back the way the player's coming and the player misses it, all of a sudden he's got freedom and he can then take a touch and play it downfield. Of course, it just didn't work out. He's tried to do that. The player's nicked it off him. But what I would say in this, look, the David Rea one's an obvious error. Very, very bad mistake from David Rea. However, this one, look, it is an error, an obvious error. However, I fully understand why he's made this error and why it's a difficult one to do, especially when the ball's played back on your weaker foot, it's fair to say, and when your touch doesn't allow you then to strike it upfield, I can understand how this was a difficult one to deal with. And in the end, obviously it was costly in that they did get beaten quite heavily. Peterborough looking very good, Ipswich, and it's an interesting battle between obviously Will Norris and Thomas Holy as well. They've got a really interesting battle going on there. Both, in fairness, have done well this season, but they really have flip-flopped in terms of back and forth. So whether he keeps his place now, I guess that's part of the issue as well. When you've got someone who's on your coattails like Thomas Holy and you've got two top quality goalkeepers like that, it can actually make it more difficult sometimes because it feels like even the smallest error and you might find the other goalkeeper playing.
Few more bits from the Football League to go over. A couple of great saves, by the way, from Marek Rodak in the game between Fulham and Huddersfield. Carlin Grant, 8 shots on target, not just from Grant, but from Huddersfield in total. But Rodak in great form.
He was, and yeah, only 3 shots on target for Fulham, and obviously they got the win. Look, more of a general one on Marek, because he's one that I've watched quite closely actually over the last few years, and he's another one that for me, similar to Dean Henderson, has progressed perfectly in that they've done every league, you know, and I think that's the way now for a young goalkeeper where possible, when you're at one of the bigger clubs, get yourself on loan in the National League, even Conference South, even below that if you need to initially. Nathan Baxter, another example, who went on loan to Met Police, which was I think the 8th tier of English football, you know, to then get those games adult football. Now, Marek did that, wanted to be a number one, made it clear that he did not want to be a number two anywhere he's been, so he's gone League Two, League One, Championship, of course, with Rotherham, and now Championship again with Fulham. You wonder whether Premier League is the next step. And of course, he's ousted Bettinelli, who it wasn't so long ago, we were talking about an England call-up. What was it, this time last year? Probably, maybe a little bit before then. So to have done that, huge credit to Marek, and he really is making that place his own. Every game that I've seen him play, he's an interesting goalkeeper, got a great shape, lovely side volley. Anyone that's seen him, his distribution is very, very good. He's very agile, moves well, a little bit unorthodox at times. But the biggest thing for me, and I've met him personally and had coffee with him, his mentality. He's one of these. He's so stone-faced. He knows what he wants to get from this game. He's got such confidence in himself. And I think that's a name we're going to see for years to come.
Couple of similar saves between Christian Walton and Dylan Phillips. Firstly, Christian Walton, great save. Almost a little Banks-esque, a little Peter Schmeichel against Rapid Vienna-esque. That was from Rudi Gested late on to help Blackburn gain a point at the Riverside. And Dylan Phillips, what a save against Barnsley.
Yeah, indeed. No, I think to touch on both, the first one, as you say, a bit of Gordon Banks, Peter Schmeichel, a bit like me against Charlton away many years ago.
Oh, of course, I forgot that one. Yeah, sorry.
Drop it into that same bracket, which nobody remembers except me, but hey-ho, just drop that one in. No, look, fantastic save from Christian Walter. Dylan's save, I'm going to touch on in a bit more detail because this one's gone viral to an extent. And I'm not surprised that it has because it's, look, anyone watching this and do watch it, I'm assuming it'll be on our Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yes, fantastic. So do check it out. It's not just the save. It's the fact that as the ball's being whipped in, his footwork is perfect. His positioning is absolutely spot on. The athleticism to get himself down and back on himself is phenomenal, to get to the ball, to then scoop it out. But then even after that, the speed at which he gets himself up. And what I love is that it's one of those moments where your technique goes out the window because you've just done that. You see the ball break into the striker and he's literally just gone headfirst. He's just thrown himself any way he possibly can to just form a block of sorts. I think he might get something on the second one as well, you know. So for me, arguably the best save of the season. Of course, he's another one that's gaining a lot of interest from the Premier League and not surprising at the moment, given what he's done for Charlton this season. And I know for Charlton fans, a lot have him already down as player of the season. And he's been a major player. Bearing in mind that this time last year, he's only really just breaking into that Charlton team. It's been an incredible ride this last year.
Lastly, a bit of a quirk to finish on. This one came in League One between Rotherham and Burton. Now, Jonjo O'Toole for Burton was under chase from Carl Vassell, the Rotherham attacker. O'Toole has chipped it / hacked it back to Kieran O'Hara, the Burton goalkeeper. He's overhit it and O'Hara's just caught it. He's caught it, and as a result of catching it, his momentum has taken him off the pitch. Rather than give an indirect free kick, the ref gives a corner.
Yeah, it's a pass back. It's as simple as that. There's nothing more to it. As you mentioned, Jonjo O'Toole, they had no choice, to be honest. He was obviously struggling, so he just fired it back to his goalkeeper with no real direction. I think Kieran O'Hara's made the correct decision. To try and control it there would have been ludicrous. Just give away the free kick. It's a pass back. And I can't understand how the ref could have seen it as a corner. And I'm sure they'll do their debrief as the referees do. And I've got no doubt that whoever's assessing him will say to him, that is one of the most blatant pass backs you will see.
Well, don't even, if you're O'Hara, don't give away an indirect free kick. Just duck and let it go off for a corner.
I mean, you could do, well, that was it. From the angle, I wasn't 100% sure if it was going towards the goal or not. Like you say, it's probably just going wide. I guess if you don't fully know your angles and you might have been a little bit disorientated, then I think he made the correct decision just to grab it. And in the end, he got the best of everything, really, that they end up giving a corner as opposed to the indirect free kick, which, of course, would have been a lot more dangerous.
Right, we are going to reflect on the transfers now, Richard. There are plenty, so we're going to rattle through them. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. And you've got to go on holiday, and I've been up since the early hours watching Super Bowl. So let's get cracking, shall we? The big ones on deadline day, really, regarding Premier League teams. Jonas Lersel has gone back to Huddersfield on loan from Everton, and Nathan Bishop into Manchester United from Southend.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I don't think anyone saw the Nathan Bishop one. In fairness, he's built a good name, obviously very young, racked up a good number of games for his age, certainly. No, look, fantastic for him. And certainly when you've got that kind of experience in League One, and I know Southend have been struggling, when you've got that kind of experience, Manchester United are always looking for the top English young talent. We've seen what they've been able to do with the likes of Dean Henderson. So, look, he's going to go into an incredible environment to learn, certainly. And look, in regards to Jonas Lersel, of course, they needed someone. It was very clear. The fact that it's only a short-term injury to their goalkeeper, but of course, they've got Joel Coleman there, who is highly rated, and I'm sure that he will be given a bit of a chance. In fact, he did play at the weekend in the game against Fulham. However, of course, Jonas Lersel is such a fan's favourite. They absolutely adore him there. Not getting an opportunity at Everton, so to be able to come back, I'm no doubt the fans will absolutely love it. You get the impression at some point he will get his opportunity, and I've got a feeling that when he does, he will likely keep it.
Just very quickly, interesting situation on that one. And we spoke to Ben Hamer recently. That's coming up on a Goalkeepers Union podcast. But Kamil Grabara is out, like you say, with an injury. Ben Hamer is a Huddersfield goalkeeper. He's on loan at Derby. Didn't get recalled.
No, and I'm sure they would have wanted to. It's a funny one with Ben Hamer, though. The fact that the Huddersfield fans haven't necessarily taken to him, and the fact that he's doing so well at Derby, it does make sense for him to stay put. I think that was the correct decision. The one that I worry about in this little situation is Joel Coleman, because, as mentioned, he did play the game at the weekend. You would feel it's his shirt to lose. You would feel they'd give him an opportunity. That being said, when you've got two goalkeepers of the calibre they have now that will be up against him, there might be the fear that he goes from first choice to third.
Okay, at Wickham, Cameron Yates is injured, so they've got David Stockdale again on loan. He's come from Birmingham. Andy Fisher has gone from Blackburn to MK Dons. Harry Burgoyne has gone from Wolves to Shrewsbury. That one is a permanent deal. And Marcus Dewhurst has gone from Sheffield United to Carlisle.
Yeah, to touch on Stockdale initially, and this was an interesting one in that, of course, we all know it wasn't so long ago that he's getting promotion to the Premier League with Brighton. Of course, it hasn't really worked out on the whole at Birmingham, it's fair to say. I found this an interesting one for the fact that Wickham's goalkeeper, Allsop, has been very, very good this season. The fact that they've been top of the league for the majority of the season, and he's been one of their standout players. And Stockdale's come in and he played the first game. So I can't help but feel that he will feel a little bit hard done by, given the wonders that he's done. However, Wickham did need a goalkeeper. And when you've got someone of the calibre of David Stockdale that becomes available, and it was within their budget, I believe, I fully understand why they've gone for it. I just worry from Wickham's point of view that it's not one that they come to regret, because certainly with Allsop, I mentioned, he has been so good this season. You don't want to make a player like that unhappy, really.
Fisher, Burgoyne and Dewhurst.
Yep, so Andy Fisher, an interesting one for him, really highly rated at Blackburn, third choice at Blackburn. I know that the manager there really likes him, and this is an opportunity for him to certainly back up Nichols to begin with at MK. Of course, very highly rated goalkeeper himself, and I think he certainly fits the style of football that MK plays, so I can see why they've done this one. Andy Fisher is a name I'm sure we'll hear a lot of in the future. He's just got to look for an opportunity. The difficulty is, it's that whole catch-22 that so many goalkeepers find, and that when you don't have a load of games behind you, it can be difficult to go in as a number one in the league. So this is a good opportunity in that he goes in as a number two, but of course, if you're number two, you're only an injury sending off or loss of form away from getting your opportunity. So he needs a little bit of luck at MK to get his opportunity. If nothing else, it'd be nice for him to be involved with the first team squad for the rest of the season. To touch on a couple of the others, Harry Burgoyne interesting for Harry. He's been one that those will remember. He was involved in England under 21s. He made his debut for Wolves, played in the famous game away at Liverpool in the FA Cup when they beat them 2-1, and he was brilliant that day. And he had an incredible start to his career. And it's just been one where he's had incredible bad luck the last couple of seasons, including a loan at Plymouth, where before the season started, he broke his leg. A loan at Bury, and Bury went under. He was meant to go to Salford, and the paperwork wasn't done in time. It's just been one thing after another for Harry, but he did very well at Falkirk last season when he went there. And I think Shrewsbury, he'll go there initially to fight for the shirt again. You've got Max O'Leary doing a very good job there, but it's a nice move for him. He's from over that way as well, so I'm excited for him. Marcus Dewhurst, another name that a lot of young goalkeepers will know. He's a young English goalkeeper, very highly rated. Similarly, he'll be going to Carlisle to play a backup role initially, but he'll certainly be looking to put a bit of pressure on the number one there, Adam Collin, and look to get his opportunity.
Nice. A few more now. Luke Steele has gone back to Millwall on loan from Forest. Pontus Dahlberg, he's gone to Emmen in Holland from Watford. Vito Manone has gone from Reading to Esbjerg in Denmark. And Kostel Pantilimon, the forgotten goalkeeper, is now with AC Ammonia in Cyprus. He's gone there from Forest. Asmir Begovic has gone to AC Milan from Bournemouth. Now, for the first half of the season, he was on loan at Karabag. Now he's in Serie A.
It's funny, isn't it? The life of a goalkeeper. Just want to touch on there. Obviously, best wishes to Frankie Fielding. It's just a nightmare with injuries the last couple of seasons. Of course, that's meant that Luke Steele has gone back to Millwall. But no, from Asmir's point of view, and we exchanged a few messages on the back of this, and naturally, he's absolutely delighted. And I saw him pre-season, so I went and did an interview with Aaron Ramsdale, which was very interesting. And as I was coming out, I bumped into Asmir. We had a little bit of a chat, and I could tell he was a little bit upset with how it all worked out there and the fact that he'd been frozen out in the way that he had. But it just shows you, like, the amount of opportunities that are out there for goalkeepers. And because we do play a very different sport within a sport, it can often be that the likes of an AC Milan, they'll know exactly how good Asmir Begovic is. And even if he has had his issues at Bournemouth, and maybe things haven't quite worked out in the last year or so as he'd have wanted, AC Milan are very aware as to just how good he is. And it seems, in fairness, like a really good fit. And from what I've heard, it sounds like he's gone over there, and although it's only been a short period of time, he's settled in really well.
And the last few, Chris Maxwell, he's gone to Blackpool from Preston. Jordan Archer, unattached. He is now with Fulham. Got another club, hasn't he?
Yeah, credit to him, because he's gone a long period of time being unattached. You know, it's very rare that a goalkeeper who's played as many games in the Championship as he did last season has to then wait until December to get a club. And he obviously went to Oxford on a short-term deal with Simon Eastwood getting a month's injury. So Jordan Archer went in there and performed reasonably well in the games that he played. Of course, there is a bit of a link at Fulham with Rob Birch, who was previously at Spurs and I believe worked with Jordan Archer previously, so they know each other. And I think with the rumours surrounding Bettinelli, of course, Fulham did need to strengthen their goalkeeping ranks. So now to have, and the fact that Bettinelli hasn't gone, the fact that you've got Rodak, Bettinelli and Jordan Archer, it's got to be one of the strongest threes in the Championship, it's fair to say.
And to finish on that, we've got three more, Richard. Is this a strong three? I'll let you decide. Firstly, Conrad Logan. He's gone to Forest Green Rovers from Mansfield. This was a funny one because he'd made 25 appearances for Mansfield this season. He'd lost his place to Bobby Olenek. It's been a strange situation at Forest Green Rovers this season. They've had Lewis Thomas in. They've had Jojo Wallacott, as you know. Adam Smith has come in. Now it's Conrad Logan. What is going on there?
Yeah, look, and the bizarre thing is that the fans are delighted with all the goalkeepers. Unfortunately, there's a manager there. I don't like to call out managers, but obviously when I'm watching from afar and I watch all the interviews, and he's not particularly positive about any of his goalkeepers, unfortunately. But I've watched Jojo a lot, of course. My links with Bristol City when he's played, I've been really impressed with him. Lewis Thomas, again, massive fans' favourite there. Some brilliant performances earlier in the season. Dropped a couple of times, not for any real reason. Adam Smith, again, one that is trying to build his career again, has had a little bit of a setback. And now, of course, to bring in Conrad Logan. So, yeah, four goalkeepers in a calendar year. Now, all four for me are very good goalkeepers, so I'm not having it that you've got four goalkeepers that you need to chop and change all the time. And look, I've got my opinions on this from a managerial standpoint, but certainly from bringing in Conrad Logan, what they will get is experience. You know, that's one thing that certainly Lewis and Jojo don't necessarily have in the way that Conrad does. And Conrad's been a solid performer for a long period of time now, and it'll be interesting to see how he does at Forest Green. It obviously went a little bit sour by all accounts at Mansfield. So it's another opportunity for him to impress and to show what he can do. And from Forest Green's point of view, bearing in mind they were there or thereabouts for so long, they have just come off the boil a little bit. It'll be interesting as to whether they can kick on again now with Conrad in goal.
The last one. It's all been solved, mate. It's done. It has finally been sorted at the Cardiff City Stadium. Neil Harris has made a decision on his three goalkeepers. Neil Etheridge has remained. Adam Smithies has remained. Joe Day has been the one to go out on loan. He's gone on to AFC Wimbledon.
He has indeed. So you've still got the situation with Alex Smithies and Neil Etheridge, which is interesting because you've got two first choice goalkeepers there. So I can't help but feel that will change at the end of the season. I think Joe Day will come back into the fold and will end up being a number two. However, as a short-term loan, I think this is a good one for Joe Day. So I can't help but feel that by bringing Joe Day in, what they've done is they've gone from having two very young goalkeepers, which they've had up to this point, to now having one who is very experienced. And it does kind of make sense, given that they are going to have another fight on their hands, you feel, back into the season, to have someone of Joe Day's experience, his ability. I understand why this is a good fit from Nathan Trott's point of view. It'd be interesting to see what has happened or what will happen, because the whole point was he's gone there in order to get games. If it's going to be a case of him not getting games, then I can't help but feel that not only he, but West Ham won't be too happy.
Radio, Richard. That has been quite the epic hour or so, I think, we've been in here recording.
We have indeed. That's quite a roundup this week.
It's a chunky one. You'll be back next week. We'll be back next week, but we'll be separated, like I said, by the Atlantic. We'll be speaking to you over Skype, over the phone, over FaceTime. Who knows?
Technology. There you go.
Lovely stuff. This has been the Goalkeepers Union Between the Sticks, in association with Goalkeepers 365, GK Icon Academies, and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.